Thanks to FreshBooks for supporting the Productivity Show. Join the 24 million people who have used FreshBooks. Try it for free for 30 days. No catch, and no credit card required. Go to freshbooks.com/TPS and enter TPS in the How Did You Hear About Us section to get started. Thanks also to Grammarly for supporting the Productivity Show. Grammarly is a communication tool that helps people improve their writing to be mistake-free, clear, and effective. Start writing confidently by going to grammarly.com/TPS to get 20% off a Grammarly premium account today. Welcome to The Productivity Show, podcast by Asian Efficiency to help you maximize your productivity so you can get everything done without having to sacrifice your health, family, and things that matter to you. We've helped tens of thousands of people save time, be happier, and become more productive. I'm joined today by Eric Tivers, who runs the podcast ADHD Rewired, and he's a licensed clinical social worker who helps people with ADHD succeed in life. We dive deep into what ADHD is, how to diagnose it, and what to do to be productive if you think you have ADHD. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. You can find links to everything that we share in the show notes by going to theproductivityshow.com/286. And now, on with the show. And welcome back to The Productivity Show. Today with me, I have a very special guest, Eric Tivers. How are you doing today?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm super excited to have you on the show today because over the years, one of the things I've learned from getting feedback from our listeners and just meeting people in person who listen to the podcast is that a lot of people deal with ADD and ADHD. And I know you're one of the experts in this field, so I'm really excited to dive into this today. But before we kick things off here, can you share a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. So my name is Eric Tivers. I'm a licensed clinical social worker by training. What that means is I have a master's degree plus a lot of other training. I needed to take a state exam to get that licensure. I specialize in ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. What I do professionally is sort of different than what probably most licensed clinical social workers do. I exclusively work online doing coaching for adults with ADHD. I used to do therapy for both kids and adults with ADHD, as well as those on the autism spectrum. But over the past about 5 years, I've transitioned from being a traditional therapist to more of an entrepreneur, coach, podcaster, because I have a podcast called ADHD Rewire that I've been doing for a little over 5 years. And, you know, it's my mission to help people with ADHD feel understood. As somebody who, I have ADHD myself. I was diagnosed when I was in college after I almost failed out of college. And not knowing why you struggle really is hard, right? And once I had that diagnosis and go, oh, that's why I did this, that, and the other thing. And, oh, here are things that are actually helpful that you can do about it. I knew that it was a game changer in my life. And so what I do is help people learn how to better manage their ADHD and have more of an acceptance around their ADHD, because it's a disorder that, one, knowledge makes a difference about it. If you understand what's actually going on in the brain and that there are things that you can do that are really helpful, you know, it can make a life-changing difference.
As someone who does not have ADHD, I always found it very challenging to give advice to people who do have that, because if you have this and you're talking to somebody who does not have that, it's kind of difficult to be on the same page in a lot of different ways about teaching, coaching, consulting. And I've just had so many requests over the years from people listening to the show and people who are clients of ours and ask, Tan, I would love to get some specific information on ADHD. I think I have it or I might not have it. And I always shied away from that because, one, I don't feel qualified whatsoever. I think you have more qualifications in that department than I do. So can you explain to people who maybe don't know if they have it or don't have it at all, but what do people do differently? What do they go through when they have ADHD?
Sure. And I think that the thing that is really important for listeners to know too is that the things that are helpful for people with ADHD are actually things that can be helpful for everybody. At the core of what ADHD is a difficulty with what we call executive functions. So these executive functions are, and there's a lot of different definitions out there of executive functions or executive functioning. You know, it's all the things that you would have if you had an executive assistant, what they would do for you, right? It's the planning, the organizing, the task initiation, the doing the right thing at the right time. Also the emotional self-regulation, you know, not just stopping what you're doing and jumping on the next shiny object that comes by you. You know, so there's a lot of different aspects to what ADHD is. And I think that there's a lot of misinformation too. And that's also a big part of what I try to do when coming on podcasts like this is to help people understand what ADHD really is, because most people just in the general public don't have a good idea of what it really is because, unfortunately, the misinformation is still winning in the education campaign compared to what the actual evidence-based, well-researched-based information is around ADHD.
So is there a difference, for example, between ADD and ADHD? Because I tend to use those terms interchangeably, and I see a lot of people do that.
Yeah, other than the H. So the diagnostic label is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. Okay. So if you were to look in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental and Psychiatric Disorders, right? This is the kind of the mental health Bible, although that's debatable. You're only going to see ADHD. It's been 30 some years now since ADD has been an actual official diagnosis. So there's three we call presentations of ADHD. And this is, you know, it keeps changing. It used to be subtypes. Now it's presentations because we found that people can at one point in their life, say, be diagnosed with the hyperactive and impulsive subtype or presentation, and then later actually not meet the criteria, but they might still meet the criteria of what is called the inattentive presentation. And typically when people say ADD, what they're talking about is the inattentive presentation of ADHD, right? So it's ADHD predominantly inattentive presentation. So I use the term ADHD when I'm talking about all of it because that is the accurate medical terminology. So you can have ADHD with hyperactivity and impulsivity. You can have ADHD that predominantly inattentive presentation. Or what most people have is the combined type, meaning they have features of both of those.
So how do you know if you have it?
The gold standard for diagnosing ADHD is clinical interviews, rating scales, talking to people who know you. Because it's, you know, as much as people want there to be a equivalent of a pregnancy test for ADHD, there is not. There are people out there who say you can get this brain. It's unfortunately, this is part of the misinformation campaign that's out there, that there's too many false positives for the people out there that say that you can diagnose ADHD with a brain scan. You can't do it. You know, you have a 50-50 shot of getting it wrong. So you can't go with that kind of information, right? So when you look at all the symptoms and features of ADHD, so you have 9 symptoms of hyperactivity and impulsivity. 6 of those are hyperactivity, 3 are impulsivity, right? And then you also have 9 symptoms of inattention, okay? For kids, you need to have 6 out of those 9 of either hyperactivity or inattention or combination of both to come to that diagnosis. A change that has happened in the last few years is because ADHD is a developmental disorder, right? So the brain develops slower in certain areas of the brain. So it continues to catch up, but it's always a little bit behind as well. So you have at the age of 18 now, you can have 5 out of 9 of the symptoms to meet the criteria. Because as the brain continues to develop, it would make sense that you're not going to have as many of those features as you would as a child. You know, most people who have ADHD in childhood will continue to have it into adulthood. And so it's being able to work with, you know, there's lots of tests you can take online or assessments you can take online. If it comes back saying, yeah, you might have ADHD, that's informative. Then your next step is to make an appointment with a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a mental health professional or your doctor to actually go through a more comprehensive evaluation, which, you know, includes rating scales, and also includes talking to maybe your spouse or somebody else that knows you well. Because one of the things that we know about ADHD is that we're not always the best self-reporters. So having somebody else to say, how do you see this person, is really important.
Oh, interesting. So there's no, like you said, there's no pregnancy test for something like this. It's very qualitative.
Yes. And if we understand the power of statistical analysis, that it really is the state of the art, right? When we look at the percentage of people who have these criteria, we also have to have the symptoms need to present themselves at some point in childhood. Right. It used to have an arbitrary cutoff age of 7 years old. You got to see it at 7 years old. Now it changed to an arbitrary age of 12 years old. I think, and there are other leading thinkers on this topic that says basically before adolescence, right, that some of these signs are presenting themselves. But there's even some debate on that.
So what are some tactics or strategies that you help people with when they have ADHD? Because at the Productivity Show, we want to help people become more productive and achieve their goals in record time. And we do that by introducing tools and apps and strategies to help people get focused and get more things done in less time. So are there specific tactics or strategies or things that you teach or anything like that?
Yes. So I think it's important to look at specifically to around the area of inattention for ADHD. Right. So if we look at like one of the features is, this is what it says in the DSM, often fails to give close attention to details or makes careless mistakes in work. All right. So for me, let's say I have to fill out an important document form. Right. I will double and then triple check it. And even though every part of me thinks that I dotted all my I's and crossed all my T's, I know I've had that thought and feeling before, and I've missed I's and T's. So I will always have somebody else just take a quick glance at it and say, did I miss anything here? And it's amazing then how often I have missed something, even though I have checked it 3 times now, right? So that's the strategy, having somebody else to look at information that requires a high level of accuracy. Difficulty with paying attention during even just leisurely activities. So when we're looking at things that you enjoy, right? We have to look at attention is not just about focus, but it's also our ability to inhibit distraction, right? So for me, when I'm editing, doing any kind of audio editing, I'm a pretty good audio editor because I hear everything, which as doing audio engineering, I'm also a musician doing that. This is a great asset. In most other situations, it's a pain because I can't filter other sounds out, right? So tools that I use, I am wearing my Bose noise canceling headphones almost all the time. You know, I keep my door closed when I am working. So we're doing things to minimize the things that can distract us, right? One of the other features is, you know, sometimes we don't always pay attention when someone is talking to us, or it might seem like we're not paying attention. When my wife and I were first dating, it was amazing. She knew within 10 seconds of a conversation I was having with her on the phone if I was looking at something on the computer. She just knew it. She was like, are you looking at your computer right now? And then I closed the laptop. Not anymore. So it's knowing your tendencies. And this is something that I talk a lot with the members of my coaching groups about, is know your tendencies for better and worse. And then you can develop strategies and set up your environment so your tendencies, the ones that aren't helpful, you can circumvent them. And the ones that are helpful, you can use them.
One of the books that has been really influential for me is called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. And it's all about being present and being in the moment and not worrying about the past, not worrying about the future, but just being here right now. And if you study any sort of personal development or read any sort of personal development books in general, they talk about this concept a lot, right? Where it's you're being present, you're in the moment, you're engaged. And when you hear that, or you hear the concept of being present, being now, how does that reconcile with you, you being the person who has ADHD, because the tendency for people is to think, oh, you know, they can't focus, they can't think, they can't be present. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Right. No, that's a good question. You know, ADHD is actually not an inability to pay attention. ADHD affects someone's ability to regulate their attention. So if you're interested in something, there's not much difficulty with paying attention. Sometimes the difficulty is breaking your attention away from that thing you're interested in. You know, some people refer to it as hyperfocus. Some call it flow. I think that there's a lot of overlap in those two areas, but I think there are some separate unique entities about hyperfocus. Because I think hyperfocus drains our executive function kind of fuel tank more. If there is something that is really boring or tedious or is not interesting, yeah, most people have a hard time sustaining their attention when they're doing something that they don't enjoy, that is tedious. But this idea of being in the now, you know, and I teach mindfulness-based meditation in my coaching groups, and I'm consistently inconsistent with my meditation practice. And part of, you know, when we are trying to, if we're looking at meditation, you know, so with most meditation, there's a centering on our breath, right? It's a focal point, right? One of the things that I have learned is that it's not about clearing the mind and having this, like, this nirvana moment of just absolute clarity. And yeah, those are great when you have those moments, right? But what I've come to learn is how to just observe what is without judgment and with curiosity, right? Because I've gone in and out of meditation practices for much of my adult life. And whenever I'm getting back into it, that first like week or two, it used to be more frustrating than it is now. Now I view it as, all right, I should just grab the popcorn because I'm getting ready to watch the theater of my mind, because it's going to be super busy when I try to sit down to quiet my thoughts. But I'm not trying to make my thoughts be quiet. I'm just trying to keep my attention on my breath, right? And I'm just noticing how often it wanders, right? Without judgment, just going, huh, isn't that interesting, right? So yeah, being in the moment is something that we can do when we're interested. When we're not interested, it's hard, but it's also like a lot of things related to the brain. We can train that muscle in our brain to sustain our attention for longer periods of time as well.
Grammarly is a writing assistant that will make you look and sound smarter, whether you're at school, at work, or when you're on the go. Grammarly's free version can be downloaded by anyone on your computer and phone, and helps you review critical spelling and grammar. The real magic, though, is with Grammarly Premium. It gives you more advanced help. It looks at advanced punctuation, structure, style, vocabulary, conciseness, tone, and readability for different occasions like writing a resume or a blog post. One of my favorite features of Grammarly is the vocabulary suggestion. You may not have noticed this, but we all have words and phrases we overuse in our writing. We don't even notice that we do it. Grammarly will alert you when a word or phrase appears a lot, and then it will suggest alternatives. So you don't have to sit there and come up with ideas or visit a thesaurus site. Just one click and your writing is more interesting. Go to grammarly.com/TPS to get 20% off your Grammarly Premium account today. That's grammarly.com/TPS for 20% off your Grammarly Premium account. Think back to when you started your small business. There was a never-ending list of tasks you had to do, and not enough time to do them all. If you're like most business owners, you've felt that way ever since. On this podcast, we're all about making life easier and more productive for you. And our friends at FreshBooks have the solution. FreshBooks invoicing and accounting software is specifically designed for small business owners. It's simple, intuitive, and keeps you way more organized than that shoebox filled with crumpled receipts. You can create and send professional-looking invoices in 30 seconds and have them paid 2 times faster with automated online payments. In fact, your clients have the ability to pay right from the invoice. You want to make it as easy and frictionless as possible for them to pay you. The more they get distracted by extra steps, the more likely it is that they'll delay, and that's not good for you. Have invoices and expenses perfectly organized for tax time without stress, and have FreshBooks grow alongside your business. You'll always have the tools you need when you need them without having to learn the ins and outs of accounting. So join the 24 million people who have used FreshBooks. Try it for free for 30 days. No catch and no credit card required. Go to freshbooks.com/TPS and enter TPS in the How Did You Hear About Us section to get started. So you know how there's two sides to every coin, right? Mm-hmm. There's whenever there's advantage, there's a disadvantage. Whenever there's a disadvantage, there's an Indeed. Advantage. So you probably know where I'm going with this. I'm curious to hear from your point of view, is there an advantage to having ADHD? Or are there any superpowers that you guys have that I'm not aware of that I want to have as well?
You are absolutely right. There are two schools of thought on this. As a coach and as a trained social worker, you know, social workers are the original kind of strength-based profession in mental health, and coaches are the same way. You know, we look at the strengths and how to leverage the strengths. I do not think that ADHD is a superpower, right? I've been asked, you know, if you can take the matrix, the red pill or the blue pill, like take one, you can make your ADHD go away. Would I make it go away? I would, right? What I do look at as these strengths is because I have had to learn how I learn, I view that as that's been a gift or a strength that I've been forced to gain enough insight to develop the strategies so I can be successful. I think it has given me the gift of learning how to be resilient, learning how to successfully fail, right? And I think that if things would have just come easy to me all the time, I don't think I would have had the same grit and resiliency that I feel that I have. You know, I think that the community that I've created around my podcast and my coaching groups, I mean, that's certainly, I look at that as a wonderful thing that has been created as a result of having ADHD, right? But, you know, ADHD makes a lot of things in life harder, right? Things often take us longer. We make more mistakes than the average person. When I'm presenting on an ADHD, one of the stories I share is that, you know, I had 21 jobs at the time I was 21, and I got fired from one of them because I forgot I had it. Like, how do you fire from a job? Well, I was in college. I was a computer lab monitor, which is the sweetest, cushiest job when you're in college. And I went home for winter break, which was 6 weeks long. And I came back and I totally forgot that I had that job. Because I was out of my routine. And I came back and it occurred to me like a week later. I was like, oh, I never reported for my job again. And they would not give me that job back. You know, but I also, it taught me that retail is not going to be my thing because it's like, I don't do well with repetitive tasks, right? I mean, I view myself now as proudly unemployable. You know, I've worked for other people. You know, I have a certain way that I need to do things. And yeah, that's hard when you're in an employment situation, but it could also be helpful when you work for yourself. So is it a superpower? You know, and I know that there are people who will say it is. Does it make me more creative? I can make an argument on both sides of that. So it's like, you know, I'm a musician and I've been playing piano since I was probably 4 years old. I never learned to read music. I tried. I faked being able to read music because I can just see, all right, the notes are going up here and they're going down here. That's all I really need to know. I have a really good ear for it. So I hear something once and I can play it. And what I didn't realize until much later on is that, you know, I love improvisation. I can play along with anything, right? Well, I love improvisation and I've written a lot of music. I would say, oh, I'm so creative. That's why I can never play the song the same way twice. It's like, no, I can't play the song the same way twice because it was so hard for me to structure it in exactly the same way, right? So is being able to improvise and come up with, you know, whether it's music or come up with sort of on the fly ideas, is that part of the ADHD? Maybe. It also may be that I just happen to be a creative person and they also have ADHD, right? So it's a very murky answer to that question because I don't think it's a simple question. I think the research has not really panned out. When people say people with ADHD are just much more creative, what the research has not yet panned out is, can you actually delineate those two features? Can you delineate ADHD from creativity? Which is, I think, would be an interesting study to look at. But most research studies are funded by pharmaceutical companies, and they're not that interested in strengths.
So I'm curious to hear from your experience. When you found out that you were diagnosed with ADHD, how did you change your life from that point on?
I view my life as before diagnosis and after diagnosis. My whole growing up, you know, I always had this feeling that I was smart, but my grades never showed it. I looked back in my old school report cards. All the signs were right there. And one of the challenges was I had more of the predominantly inattentive type of ADHD. So I wasn't like, you know, we think of ADHD, or a lot of people think of ADHD, and they imagine a hyperactive boy bouncing off the walls, right? As a kid, I was a lot more inattentive. So I was a spacey kid. I was the kid that was, I had all these things going on in my mind. None of them were related to what was going on in the classroom, even though my body was sitting in the classroom. So I would never be able to retain things that I read, because I'd be reading something and something that I would be reading triggered a thought. And then, you know, now I'm thinking about another thought, and then that thought triggers another thought. And I'm continuing to read the words that I had to read, but I get to the end of what I needed to read, and I have no idea what I read. That when I was diagnosed and I was prescribed Adderall, which is a stimulant medication, which is considered the frontline treatment for ADHD, you know, I still remember this like it was yesterday, the first day that I ever took medication for ADHD. I was a sophomore in college, and I was sitting there in my room. I minored in sociology, and I was reading a book from it's called Crested Kimonos, the book of the comparative Japanese business family. And it was the first time that I read a chapter of a book, and I knew what I had just read. This is 20 years ago, and I still got choked up telling that story, right? And I went through a period of grief of, wow, school would have been such a different experience for me if I would have known, right? It was like my brain got glasses, and instead of, you know, focusing on 100 different things at the same time, I was now focusing on the one thing that I was supposed to be paying attention to. And it was a game changer. I went from almost failing out. My cumulative GPA after my freshman year was a 2.0. I got a 2.2 my first semester. And then when my parents said, if you don't get those grades up, you're coming home. And I said, no way am I coming home. So I pulled up the grades, studied a lot harder. I, to be honest, picked up more books than beers my second semester. I was in the library a lot. And I got a 1.8. I knew that something wasn't right. Like, I was genuinely trying, and I knew something wasn't right. And so I went from a cumulative 2.0 after my freshman year to getting a 3.75 and above every semester after that. So in addition to the medication, I also shifted my major. I was a advertising and marketing major, and I did really bad in all those classes, which was too bad because I really enjoy my advertising and marketing. But I also learned, I struggle with writing, which is a sort of a subcomponent of ADHD. I mean, not everyone with ADHD has that issue, but it was a challenge that I had. I switched my major to social work. I was super interested in it. And so the combination of finding something that I was really interested in with the medication, it was just, for the first time in my life, I enjoyed being a student. And ever since then, I've just had an insatiable love for learning. And I'm constantly learning and trying to sharpen the saw, as Stephen Covey would say. And, you know, so it was a real, real game changer. The thing that I think a lot of adults still wrestle with, especially if they were diagnosed later in life, and this is why all the work that I do with my clients is group work, is adults with ADHD are sinking in shame. The amount of shame and feeling like you're not enough that the people with ADHD experience, it's crushing, right? I think that especially undiagnosed people with ADHD experience a lot of trauma. And I look at it as trauma by 1,000 paper cuts, right? Not like a big significant event kind of trauma, but just a repeated failure after failure after failure of screwing something up, even after trying to improve on that thing. You know, it's like you try to make it better and you end up making it worse, right? And that can really affect self-esteem and just how we see ourselves. So when we work with in a group setting, it's such a powerful dynamic to see other people who are success-oriented but also carry a lot of shame, big-time imposter syndrome stuff going on. I look at it as if you're struggling and you get the assessment and you do have an ADHD diagnosis, it's a good news diagnosis. because it's something, there's a lot you can do about it.
So you mentioned Adderall earlier and medication. Mm-hmm. What's your stance on medication and nootropics in general? So nootropics is the term, if you're not familiar, for those who are listening, it's the term that people kind of throw around when it comes to supplements to help you focus better, be more productive. So what's your stance on just using stuff like that in general?
So I always start with where the science is. And the science behind stimulant medications for ADHD says that somewhere between 70 to 90% of people with ADHD will have a positive treatment response to these medications. There's so much misinformation about the medication that it's frustrating. People say, oh, but it's so addictive. Not really. Not when it's taken as directed. And I have a colleague who, one of his things that he says is like, yeah, if you're snorting it and taking a lot more than you're supposed to, that's misuse. And you're going to have problems if you do that. But if you're working with a doctor who understands how to prescribe it and works with you on finding the right dose and the right medication, and sometimes it does take some trial and error, it can be a life changer. And I've worked with so many people who they said, no, medication's a last resort. And they got to the point where they were beyond hitting rock bottom and they finally take medication. And without fail, they'll say, I don't know why I was so resistant to taking medication. And the feeling that I've had many people with ADHD have who take medication for the first time is they said that they felt normal for the first time. It's like your brain was in this cloud that you never knew was in a cloud because it's all you've ever known. And then like suddenly it's like, you know, that moment in the beginning of The Simpsons where the clouds clear and it's just like The Simpsons. It's like that clarity of like, oh, wow. It's like the brain fog kind of was lifted. So stimulant medication is safe and effective when used and prescribed as directed. I've been taking stimulant medication now. I'm coming on 20 years of being on a stimulant medication, right? I'm healthy. I'm doing okay, right? This conversation wouldn't be happening. My business wouldn't be happening. I probably would not have finished college if it were not for that medication. Not everyone has a positive response, though, to it. Things like irritability is a common side effect. Sleep issues can be a common side effect. Issues around appetite can be a common side effect. And those are things you got to talk to your doctor about because there's a lot of different medications out there that are worth working with a doctor that knows what they're talking about because there's a lot of doctors. There are still doctors who will say they don't think ADHD is a real thing. And if you ever work with a doctor who says that, find another doctor, right? Because there is more research behind ADHD than any other psychiatric disorder in all of mental health, which is why it's so maddening to me when the misinformation wars are winning, right? So nootropics, supplements. So here's the thing. At least in the United States, the FDA doesn't regulate this stuff, right? And people say, I want to try all natural approaches. I think this is something that's really important just as a consumer of health products and services, right? All natural is a marketing slogan, okay? Because cyanide is all natural and that will kill you, right? So just because something is all natural does not make it safe. And can you tell me of any plant that you've seen supplement pills grow on? They're made in the same kind of labs that you know the medications are made in. The only difference is there's actual oversight and regulation about these things. So when it comes to nootropics, there is not enough data that supports the efficacy for ADHD. And this is true for almost every supplement out there, that there's no safety data, right? I mean, there was a big thing a couple of years ago where I forget who did this study, but they went to places like Target, Walmart, GNC, a couple other places, and they sampled just protein powders and some other supplements and found, wow, there's stuff in here that is not on the label and vice versa, right? So buyer beware when it comes to this kind of stuff, right? So I say, I'm not saying don't touch the stuff, don't try it. I would say if you're struggling, start with where the science is at, right? And then once you feel you're doing as well as you can be doing, if you want to experiment with that kind of stuff, then try that. But don't avoid getting the help that can actually help because it's not an all-natural, quote-unquote, approach. Is it possible that nootropics can work? Yeah, it's possible. We just genuinely don't know enough about it yet. We don't have the, you know, people say, oh, there are studies. Most of those studies are put out by the company that make the nootropics, right? That is not a valid empirical study. Valid empirical studies are ones that are randomized. They are placebo controlled. They are blind. So the people taking it, they don't know if they're getting a sham, a placebo medication, or the actual thing. The person administering it, they don't know if they are administering the placebo or the actual thing, right? And there has to be, this has to occur in multiple locations and it has to be repeatable. This is the way that ADHD and any medication that's prescribed medication is studied, right? And we know that this stuff is safe and effective, the medications for ADHD. Whereas there are risks in taking nootropics. There are risks in taking supplements. You know, there's risks in everything. There's also risks in not treating ADHD with medications. There is a study that looked at all these different outcomes from early pregnancy to lower economic attainment, lower educational attainment. And it looked and was comparing ADHD with and without treatment. And without treatment and with treatment, it is still the risks of all these things. You're still not as well off as those without ADHD. But with medication, with the treatment, your risk factors for all those things decrease.
So Eric, before we wrap things up here, I think, first of all, I think this everything that you're sharing here is great. And there's lots of information here today. And for somebody who's listening right now, who suspects that they might have ADHD, what are some of the next steps that you would say that they should follow? Or is there a message that you want to tell them?
Yeah, you know, next steps, I think, is to, since you are a podcast listener, I would encourage you to hit search on your podcast app right now and search ADHD Rewired and listen to a couple episodes. You know, one of the things that I do on my podcast is, you know, yes, I talk to, you know, experts, but mostly who I talk to is people like you, as the listening audience, not you. You're very not ADHD, but just everyday people who are living with ADHD, right? You have your, as I was talking before about all the symptoms, but there's all these nuances that when you get into dialogue with people who are talking about their experiences living with ADHD, you know, people will tell me that they've had these moments where they started listening to the podcast and they literally pulled over and they're like, oh my gosh, like this is exactly describing me. This person even, you know, thinks and speaks the way I speak. And so it's learning as much as you can about it, not to be afraid of treatment, and know that with treatment that there is, you can live a better life. You know, there's a lot of people, a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of people who are seeking information on productivity, right? There's a reason that you're struggling with productivity, and that reason may be related to ADHD. You know, when we have issues around organizing, time management, biting off more than you can chew, procrastination, these are all things that people with ADHD struggle with. Yes, these are also things that most people struggle with in various degrees. When it comes to ADHD, you're looking at a life kind of culmination of struggle in these areas. So don't be afraid of it. It is a real thing. ADHD is not a religion. It's not something that we believe in or don't believe in. There is real science behind this, and there is real hope to be had with treatment and with the right information and with the right support.
Thank you, Eric. We'll have links to your podcast and everything else that you publish online in the show notes as well. And I want to thank you for being on the show today. I found this really helpful and enlightening for myself, and I'm pretty sure for everybody else that's listening today. So thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much. And listeners can go to my website, ADHDRewired.com. It's the best way to reach out to me. All my links for how you can reach me are there. And I hope for your listeners that this resonates with them. And this could be one of those things that is a game changer for people's lives. So thank you.
At Asian Efficiency, we believe that you shouldn't have to sacrifice your personal life to get stuff done. You should be able to get everything done in the time you have. That's why we built a productivity quiz to help you maximize the time you have, increase your energy, and get you more focused. We've helped tens of thousands of people increase their productivity, and within 2 minutes of taking a productivity quiz, we'll show you exactly what you need to do next to increase your productivity. To take the quiz, just go to theproductivityshow.com/quiz. Again, that URL is theproductivityshow.com/quiz. Don't let your never-ending to-do list drag you down and stop sacrificing your health and family to get stuff done. Take the quiz today. You'll be on your way to becoming superhuman productive. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving us an iTunes review or star in Overcast. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next Productive Monday.